Okay, so imagine this, right? Like, your boss just comes up to you one day and says, "Hey, guess what? Your workload is doubling." And we're not talking about, like, just a few extra tasks here and there. We're talking going from a, let's say, reasonable 50-hour week to a completely soul-crushing 70, maybe even 90 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's what happened to this woman named M. Jane Miner. She was a sales rep for Centocor. And this whole situation, it brings up this, like, huge legal question, Can an extreme workload actually be considered discrimination?
It's pretty wild, right? Like when you think about Miner v. Centocor, it really, pushed those boundaries of how we define adverse employment action. It's like it's not always as clear cut as just getting fired or demoted.
Yeah, totally. And it's not like just a theoretical thing either. This workload increase, it caused some serious health problems for Miner. She ended up having to, like, go on disability because of it.
Oh, wow.
And to make things even more, I guess, dramatic, both CentiCorp and the Social Security Administration, they both agreed she was disabled.
That's crazy. So, like, knowing that, it makes you wonder how the courts could even think about siding with CentiCorp.
Exactly. Like, where do we draw the line between, a job just being demanding and it actually being discriminatory? That's what we're going to, like, really dive into today, right? So tell me, how did the courts get this so wrong at the beginning?
Well, the initial issue was that the district court, they didn't see this huge workload as an adverse employment action. And this is like a key legal term, right? Basically, they were saying that because she didn't get fired or demoted, it wasn't a big enough deal legally.
Hold on, wait. So even though her workload literally made her disabled, they didn't think it was a problem. That doesn't sound right at all.
It definitely shows how important it is to understand how, legal terms are defined and like applied in these cases. But thankfully, this wasn't the end of the story. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, they disagreed and their reasoning was really like groundbreaking.
Okay, I'm really curious to hear what they had to say about this.
So the Fifth Circuit, they made this like brilliant comparison. They said all those extra hours Miner was forced to work, they're essentially like a 20% pay cut.
Wow.
They argued that time is money, especially when you're talking about work and this big increase in workload, it basically lowered her hourly rate.
Yeah, that's a super powerful way to think about it. It really makes the impact of all those extra hours way more real.
Right.
Totally.
So the Fifth Circuit, they broadened the legal understanding of adverse employment action with this case. But T, and this is a big but, it didn't mean Miner automatically won.
Oh, right. Because you can't just show that you were treated poorly at work, right? You have to
Yeah.
actually prove it was because of, like, your age or your sex or something else that legally protects you.
Exactly. And that's where things get a lot more, I guess, complicated for Miner. To understand why, we have to talk about something called the McDonnell-Douglas framework. You can think of it like a checklist for discrimination
Okay,
cases.
got it. A checklist. So, what's on this checklist?
Well, first, Miner had to prove she was in a protected class. Here, it was her age and sex. Second, she had to show she was doing her job well, which was clear in this case. And finally, she had to prove that something bad actually happened to her at work, which, as we said, the Fifth Circuit agreed on.
Okay, so she got through the first three parts, right? What was the problem then?
Well, the last part, and it's often the hardest, was for Miner to show that younger or male sales reps were treated better than she was.
So even though the workload was crazy, she had to prove that her supervisor, Siciliano, wasn't just being a jerk to everyone, but that he was being a jerk to her specifically because she was a woman or because of her age.
Right. And this is where things kind of fell apart. The court just didn't see enough proof that Siciliano had like discriminatory intentions. They pointed out that all the sales reps had the same tough workload rules.
It's almost like they were saying, well, if he wanted to get rid of her, he would just fired her, right?
You could definitely see it that way. The real issue was that the court just wasn't convinced that there was this like intentional discrimination behind his actions.
So even though this whole thing seems totally unreasonable legally, it just wasn't enough to win.
Yeah. It really shows how important this idea of comparators is in these cases.
Imperators, what are those?
So, a comparator is basically someone with a similar job, but they're not in your protected class. Like here, it'd be a younger male sales rep. To make her case stronger, Miner needed to show this guy was getting better treatment than she was.
Got it.
Without a comparator, it's tough to prove discrimination, even if it feels super unfair.
So even though Miner's case might seem crazy unfair from a legal point of view, it just wasn't enough.
Yeah. And this isn't to say, you know, that her experience wasn't valid. It's more about like understanding the specific rules of the game when it comes to discrimination cases. There's actually this really good quote from the case.
Okay, let's hear it.
Judge Easterbrook, the one who wrote the opinion, he said, requiring minor to work 25% longer for the same pay is basically a 20% pay cut.
Whoa.
Great.
That really puts it into perspective, huh? It makes you think about like, how much those extra work hours really cost you. Time is money, you know?
Absolutely. And it also shows that the court understood that this kind of workload could really hurt employees, even if it wasn't as obvious as a firing or demotion.
So this whole case, it's been like a wild ride, and it's got me thinking about like the real world impact. What can employers and employees learn from Minor v. Senecor? Like, how can we avoid these situations in the future?
You know, that's a great question. It really highlights how important it is for employers to have, you know, clear policies, especially when you're talking about like workload expectations.
So like instead of having this vague sense of what's reasonable, employers should have specific guidelines for different jobs, right?
Exactly. And those policies, they need to be applied fairly to everybody. Doesn't matter if you're like young or old, male or female, whatever. This helps to make things, you know, fair from the get-go, and it reduces the risk of discrimination, even if it's unintentional.
Makes sense. It's like building fairness right into the system, right?
Sure.
But what about employees? What can they take away from Minor's experience?
For employees, this case really shows, you know, how important documentation is. If you ever feel like you're being treated unfairly, like you're getting different treatment than your coworkers, start keeping track of everything.
So like writing down specific times when you were given more work or treated differently than someone doing the same job.
Yeah. Make sure you include, you know, the dates, the times, details about the work you were given and who was involved. This kind of documentation can be like super important and you ever need to make a case for discrimination.
It's like that saying, if it's not written down, it didn't happen.
Well, in legal terms, that's not always completely true, but documentation definitely helps your case. You know, courts need real evidence, not just feelings.
This is starting to sound like a legal thriller. All this talk of evidence and documentation makes it seem like we're like putting together a puzzle.
Yeah, in a way, that's kind of what it is. Building a discrimination case, you got to connect all the dots and show a pattern of behavior.
Okay, but let's say, for argument's sake, that Siciliano DID give younger or male sales reps better workloads, like easier territories.
Mm.
How would that have changed things for Minor?
That's a really good point. And gets to the heart of what the court was looking for. If Minor had been able to prove, you know, with solid evidence that her supervisor was treating her differently than similar colleagues who weren't in her protected class, it could have been a completely different outcome.
So the court wasn't saying that a heavy workload could never be discriminatory. They just didn't see enough proof in this case.
Right. And this leads to another important point, the difference between disparate impact and disparate treatment. There are like two key ideas in employment law.
Okay, break it down for me.
So think of it like this. Disparate impact happens when a rule or practice, even if it seems neutral, has a negative effect on a specific group. Disparate treatment, on the other hand, is when someone is intentionally treated differently because of who they are.
So with Minor, the court agreed that the heavy workload hurt her, but they didn't think Siciliano did it on purpose because she was a woman or because of her age.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that both Title VII and the ADEA, they require proof of intent to discriminate, not just a negative impact. It's not enough to show that you were hurt by something. You have to show that you were hurt because of your protected class.
Seems like a pretty high bar to clear.
Yeah, it can be. That's why strong evidence, like, you know, documentation and comparators are so important in these cases.
This has been like really eye-opening. I feel like I have a much better understanding of employment law and how these discrimination claims actually work.
And we're not done yet. There's one last, you know, thought-provoking point about this case, something that goes beyond just Minor situation.
Okay, what else is there? Okay, so what is this final thought-provoking thing you mentioned? Like, what else can we learn from Minor's case?
So, you know, remember how this whole case focused on age and sex discrimination?
Yeah.
Well, the whole idea of a crazy workload being a form of, like, adverse action, that could apply to other groups, too.
Oh, interesting. So you're saying that, like, someone's religion or disability or, you know, where they're from, all that could play a role in how their workload is handled.
Exactly. Like, think about it. What if someone's religion means they need to take breaks to pray or observe certain holidays? Could denying those accommodations, even indirectly, like by giving them a ton of work, be a type of discrimination?
Wow, that really that really changes how you think about this whole thing. The line between a demanding job and discrimination, it gets really blurry, especially when you consider all these other factors.
Totally. And that's why it's so important to, you know, really understand these employment laws and to be aware of how discrimination can happen. Sometimes it's not super obvious.
So, like, what's the big takeaway for our listeners? What should they be thinking about after this deep dive?
I think Minor B. Sendecor is a good reminder that discrimination comes in lots of forms. It's not always someone saying, I'm not hiring you because you're insert protected class here.
Right, right. It can be a lot more subtle, like slowly piling on the work until it's impossible, or, like you said, not giving people the accommodations they need.
Exactly. Right, yeah. And it shows how important it is for employees to understand their rights. You know, they need to know when to speak up if they're being treated unfairly.
And for employers, it's like a big wake-up call to take steps to prevent discrimination from happening in the first place, like having those clear policies we talked about, training managers, and creating a workplace where people feel comfortable speaking up.
Couldn't agree more. It's not just about checking boxes. It's about making sure everyone feels valued, no matter who they are or what they believe.
This deep dive has been seriously insightful. We went from the specifics of this case to these big questions about discrimination that affect everyone.
Yeah, it's amazing how one case can start these important conversations.
So on that note, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought to chew on. We've been talking about like the legal definition of adverse employment action, but this case, it also makes you think about the ethics of giving people too much work.
That's a good point. Even if it's not technically discrimination, is it really okay to push people to the point of burnout?
Right. Like, where's the line? It's something we all need to think about as employers and employees.
Definitely something to consider.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
And to all our listeners, until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.